You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, November 29, 2017.
And we're talking about people who are actually using drugs themselves are the most important to have at the forefront of this, to make sure that their voice is heard.
As Tippecanoe County's needle exchange program is up for reauthorization on Monday, Chris Abert and the Indiana Recovery Alliance are building a coalition to combat local government attempts to shut down needle exchanges and harm reduction programs. That's coming up later in the program.
And as smartphones become an increasingly ubiquitous piece of modern life, they're asked to do more and more, from hailing a cab to finding that someone special to paying for goods and services. But did you know that you can lose your Fourth Amendment protection against unlawful search and seizure when you use third-party applications? Richard Fish talks about the dangers of third-party applications on your smartphone and the difficulties of protecting your digital wallet. That's coming up on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines. The Indiana Protection for Abused and Trafficked Humans, or IPATH, Task Force is holding the second part of their lecture series tomorrow in Indianapolis. Securing Justice for Labor Trafficking Victims in Indiana, the lecture is open largely to government employees and law enforcement. Kate Kimmer is the statewide anti-trafficking coordinator and the coordinator of the IPATH task force. Kimmer says the lecture addresses a meaningful survival-centered approach to identifying human trafficking.
The event is three national experts who have dealt with labor trafficking cases in different capacities. So it is law enforcement certified and CLE and CEU pending 1.5 hour credit. And it's a two-part series, and this is the second part of the two-part series. Part one was more of a background around what is labor trafficking, what are the trends we're seeing in Indiana, and how do we utilize a survivor-centered approach to be more effective, efficient, and frankly, survivor-centered in the work that we do.
The lecture event will include a panel discussion over delivering justice to victims and prosecuting traffickers.
This event will feature two incredible legal experts from the Human Trafficking Pro Bono Legal Network, Martina Vandenberg and Alex Levy, and as well as a special agent from the Department of State, be there as well, who has investigated and helped move investigations towards prosecutions for the Department of State in the context of labor trafficking all over the U.S.
Speakers for the event include the aforementioned Martina Vandenberg, president and founder of the Human Trafficking Legal Center, and Alexandra Levy, adjunct professor at Notre Dame School of Law.
I'm very excited about this event. I've been doing anti-trafficking work for a long time, and Martina Vandenberg is a name that you hear literally on all the continents. She is one of the best legal experts in this field, and the fact that she's coming to Indiana to talk to us about this and that you can see her for free is kind of unbelievable. It's a dream come true for me, really. So I'm just excited, and I would love to have people come.
Kimmer says attendees may receive law informant credit for classes by registering for the event.
Spectators bringing alcohol into Brown County High School sporting events are fueling a proposed policy change. The Brown County Democrat reports that the high school is implementing a ban on outside food and drinks, and students will not be allowed to re-enter events if they leave. That's reportedly at the request of Brown County School Superintendent Laura Hammock. Hammock is asking the school board for their support in the policy change, which she says comes after adults brought in alcohol to a girls' basketball game. Adults would be allowed to re-enter events at the high school.
The former Muncie police chief is suing the city and its mayor for back pay after he claims he was forced out of office early. Former Muncie Police Department Chief Steve Stewart resigned last year. In the lawsuit, he alleges he was ordered to investigate a former city employee who was offered to share information about public corruption after she was fired. And that information was subject to an FBI investigation, which Stewart claims Muncie Mayor Dennis Tyler asked him to look into. Stewart claims he repeatedly refused to interfere in the investigation after being asked and then threatened by Mayor Tyler. Stewart says he was forced to submit a letter of resignation in which he took fewer sick days and vacation days than he believes he was entitled. The Muncie Star-Press submitted a Freedom of Information Act request regarding Stewart's lawsuit, but was reportedly denied information by the city. In a press conference on November 17th, city officials and attorneys said they would be transparent to their citizens. In a press release, Mayor Tyler stated, quote, "The city is always and always will be transparent to its citizens, providing any public information when requested," unquote. The Muncie Star-Press reports they have yet to receive the information they requested from the city.
Governor Eric Holcomb is appointing a Cook Group executive to the Ivy Tech Community College Board of Trustees. Gretchen Gutman of Bloomington will serve until July of 2020. She represents Green, Lawrence, Martin, Monroe, and Owen counties. In a press release, Ivy Tech stated that Gutman is a 20-year veteran of the legislative and government policy. She served as the chief advisor to the Senate Finance Committee in the Indiana legislature and was a partner in an Indianapolis law firm. Before joining the Cook Group, Gutman served as the associate vice president for governmental relations at Ball State University. She holds a bachelor's degree in history, a master's in public affairs, and earned her law degree at Indiana University. Ivy Tech is the state's largest post-secondary institution and the nation's largest singly accredited statewide community college system.
It's approaching Christmas time, of course, and if you're naughty this year, you might run into a demonic group of Santa's helpers. This weekend is the annual Krampus Nacht in Bloomington, where giant fur-clad and horned demons come out to threaten naughty children in downtown Bloomington. And WFHB correspondent Jan Walker brings us this report.
I'm Jan Walker, and I'm talking with Kel McBride about Krampus Rampage and Bazaar. Thank
Hello.
You for meeting with me.
Thanks for having me. The Krampus Rampage and Bazaar is coming up. It'll be December 2nd, Saturday. It'll take place in lovely downtown Bloomington. It's a great opportunity to get out and enjoy the city in the wintertime months. We will be starting at 5 p.m. with our Krampus Bazaar. That'll be at the City Commons, where the farmers market is traditionally held. There'll be all kinds of activities there people can participate in, everything from sack races and chalk art to mask making. And then after the parade, people can even get up close and personal to the Krampus.
What's the history of Krampus?
Krampus are an Alpine legend. They get to hear them more in about Austria, Germany, and sometimes northern Italy. And the Krampus are the sidekick to St. Nicholas. We know St. Nicholas as St. Nick or Santa Claus. And here in the United States, Santa Claus makes a list of who's naughty and who's nice. The good kids get candy and presents. And oddly, in America, it seems like the bad kids also get candy and presents. When you're talking about St. Nicholas and Krampus, it's a whole different story. We still get the little kids and the good adults get candy and presents if they're good. However, for those that have been naughty and have had bad behavior, they get punished. And the way they get punished is they get frightened by these large, hairy, evil beasts with long claws and big horns. And they get frightened, and they get a little terrorized, and they might even get a swat on the butt.
Now, how did that go from that legend to a festival?
You know, a friend of mine posted a video on Facebook about 6 years ago of this amazing Alpine parade of Krampus. It just blew my mind, honestly. That day, I was watching Krampus parades from all over that region and thought, you know, we could do that here in Bloomington. So that evening, I took out one of our core coordinators and took him out for drinks and said, hey, do you think we could do this? And he says, I'm in. So 13 months later, we had the first Krampus event.
Wow. Now, I also saw where there might be some fire spinners.
So, yeah, the parade itself will start at 6 p.m. It will begin at 4th and Madison, work its way north up Madison Street to 7th Street, about where the Johnson's Creamery building is. We'll take a right on 7th Street over to Morton, which is where the Bloomington Bagel Company is. We'll take that north up Morton and walk directly into the Showers Commons parking lot. And in that parade, you will find Angels, St. Nicholas, his handy sidekick Ruprecht, and then followed by them will be a large collection of fire performers who, along with our chaotic drummer and our banner bearers and torch holders, will signal that the Krampus are soon to come.
Now, would this event be acceptable for smaller children?
You know, I find that parents know their kids best, and there are some kids that are terrified of the Easter Bunny. They hate the idea of sitting on Santa Claus's lap at the mall. Mm-hmm. If that's your kid, they're not ready for Krampus. However, Alpine kids have been digging Krampus for centuries. So with the right education and the kids understand what to expect, that yes, there will be this large hairy beast that will tower over them and maybe to be a little scary. If they know that that's coming, and if they've been nice, then they've got nothing to fear. But it's good to remember that parents can put a nice sticker or a naughty sticker on their child. If the child has a nice sticker on, the Krampus will give them some space, and they'll probably get a piece of candy. But if they've got a naughty sticker, the Krampus know that they have been misbehaving.
Uh-oh. Someone said that some people come in costume.
Yeah, we love it when people come dressed up. So we get people that, you know, they might do a little bit of a Krampus-y mask, or they'll dress up in their best Christmas regalia, or we have people that sometimes show up in their crazy Christmas sweaters and things like that. However, the only actual Krampus that are at the event are the Krampus that are in the parade, just for safety's sake. They're a wild group, and you know, you just don't want to have too many beasts wandering around.
This will be my first year to go. It's going to be a family thing.
Oh, fabulous. Well, definitely stop by the bazaar. One of the things that you can do in the bazaar is participate in Harm's Way. That's right, Harm's Way. If you're interested, you can, for a small donation, have the opportunity to get really up close and personal with the Krampus towering and leering over the top of you. And when I mentioned donations, that is something that's quite important. So the Bloomington Arts Commission, the Bloomington Urban Enterprise Zone, as well as Visit Bloomington, have all given us very generous grants to help support the event. But it is an expensive event. So if people can drop some dollars here and there at our activities, or buy some fabulous merch, or even just drop a donation in one of our heralders' baskets, we greatly appreciate it, because this event is for the community. It is free, and we don't take on corporate sponsors. We've always wanted to make this more of a community event.
All right. Well, thank you. I look forward to it. And thank you very much for meeting me here today.
No problem. Watch out. I hope you've been nice.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
WFHB correspondent Jan Walker speaking with Kel McBride about this Saturday's Krampusnacht in downtown Bloomington. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources Division of Fish and Wildlife is looking for hunters to shoot deer in urban and suburban areas. The Community Hunting Access Program offers participants financial and technical assistance to hunting programs. Megan Dillon is the urban wildlife biologist for the Division of Fish Wildlife within the Department of Natural Resources.
The Community Hunting Access Program is intended to help create new public deer hunting opportunities. That's the primary goal. We also hope to pair that with this effort to help communities manage their own local deer populations. The hope is that communities will check out our website and find the application there. The application is just a way for us to get information about their community, their deer management goals and objectives.
Now, these hunts are managed by certified Community Hunting Access Program coordinators. Dillon says those coordinators partner with communities.
There is a ranking process. It kind of just depends on the applicant pool. So participation in the program from communities can be thought of as like a grant application. That application is available on our website, and I would recommend that interested communities just go ahead and reach out to us first, though.
The Community Hunting Access Program grant applications are due on March 31st, 2018. Training for community members interested in becoming a certified Community Hunting Access Program coordinator will take place on February 1st.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal foods made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I am Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. As Tippecanoe County moves to vote on their year-old needle exchange program, the Indiana Recovery Alliance is trying to stitch together harm reduction programs across the state. Jonah Chester speaks with IRA Director and Founder Chris Abert in today's WFHB feature report.
Tippecanoe County commissioners are expected to discuss the reauthorization of that county's needle exchange program on Monday, December 4th. As the Lafayette Journal-Courier reports, Gateway to Hope, Lafayette's needle exchange, may get the axe. One county commissioner has already declared they'll be voting against the program, one is voting for it, and another says they're on the fence. Gateway to Hope has only been in operation for about a year. It's the latest needle exchange to face county backlash after Lawrence County commissioners in Bedford decided not to reauthorize that program last month. One Lawrence County commissioner's comment, during which he justified his position against the exchange by quoting the Old Testament, was the subject of national attention. Chris Abert is the founder and director of the Indiana Recovery Alliance, a syringe exchange and harm reduction program in Bloomington. Abert says after repeated losses, the IRA is putting together a coalition of harm reduction organizations, churches, needle exchanges, and support groups to combat the stigma and to advocate on behalf of the programs.
So harm reduction is a public health approach as well as a human rights approach to our social issues. So rather than immediately going to criminalization, we would look at a variety of ways to mitigate the harms done to both the individual and the community for any given social issue. So an example of harm reduction would be, you know, people wearing seatbelts, engaging in sports, but doing it in a safer way, all the way to safer drug use, safer sex work. So we want to apply that, A, because it's more compassionate response, B, because it's evidence-based. Most of the times, I don't know of any time that prosecutors are accountable for showing the efficacy of their suggestions, whether that's criminalization or treatment centers within jails, drug-induced homicide charges. So we get a lot of these ideas about how to address these social problems, and there's no accountability to as whether or not they work. So harm reduction says, well, let's actually look at the evidence and institute those measures. So what we're hoping to do is to create a statewide harm reduction coalition, because we know that there are a lot of people who are negatively affected and they just aren't organized. Oftentimes, what we see going on across the state with the closing of harm reduction projects is that people aren't organized, or they're so criminalized that they don't feel they can speak for themselves if it's an actual person using drugs or engaged in sex work. So we have commissioners going and hearing from their constituents, and the gist of that is you're going to go and ask the general population about one of the most stigmatized and criminalized populations in the country. The deck is stacked, 40 years of drug war, trillions of dollars of funding to villainize people who use drugs. So what we're going to do and what we're already doing, so we've already reached out and begun the process of involving religious leaders in various communities. So inviting them, educating them, letting them know what some of the options are to address some of these social issues. Next month, we'll have meetings with business leaders to do the same thing. And then across the state, reaching out to organizations that are already involved in harm reduction, not necessarily syringe exchange, because syringe exchange is one small part of harm reduction. So we're also talking about people engaged in medically assisted treatments like methadone, buprenorphine. We're talking about people doing alternatives to jail or diversion, pre-arrest diversion programs. And we're talking about, again, like churches that are seeking alternatives and more compassionate responses. And we're talking about people who are actually using drugs themselves are the most important to have at the forefront of this, to make sure that their voice is heard. Again, every person that comes in that we engage with is a person that wouldn't otherwise be engaged, right? So we act as an access point to a population that is incredibly hard to engage with because of the criminalization and the stigma. So every contact is a success in that sense. But we also know that overall, the 30 years of conclusive data that shows up to 80% decrease in hepatitis C and HIV rates, who are five times more likely to seek treatment if there's a syringe service program in their community. And we know even things for law enforcement, like law enforcement accidental needle sticks drop by 66% given certain conditions, like decriminalization of syringes. So again, that evidence is out there. And what's frustrating is that the people who speak out the most against harm reduction efforts, they literally have no research to back up what they're saying. So oftentimes you'll hear somebody like Attorney General Curtis Hill say, syringe exchanges increase drug use, therefore they increase overdose risk. And that is insane. That's classic whataboutism, right? So we see this happening at all levels of government now, where facts are ignored and people make false equivalencies as though that they're true. So constantly we have to fight all of this misinformation, a lot of which is being spread by people who, public servants who've been given a platform and power and have overreached that for whatever reason. Every month in 2018, we're going to have a harm reduction training, whether that's basic harm reduction or outreach methods, just on and on and on, for the public and also for people, most at risk, so they can educate themselves and empower themselves. And that will be part of the organization effort to get, again, the most affected and their families at the forefront. Just don't be afraid to vocalize the needs of yourself and of your families. As with other groups throughout history, there are going to be people taking great risks and putting themselves out there to make sure that these populations have their needs met. Not even have their needs met, but don't have the state standing in the way of them meeting their own needs. So there are very simple and cost-effective solutions to a lot of the issues that we're facing today. But we need people who are going to speak out for that, and we need policymakers who are going to be able to make what might be unpopular decisions for the benefit of the good. December 16th, we have a naloxone training coming up at Monroe County Public Library. This particular training will allow attendees to train others and to distribute naloxone themselves, so it's not just to use it sexually, so they could distribute it themselves. And the last thing is that there's Monroe County just formed an opioid commission, and it will be the job of that commission to have educational events like this, to put on a summit, and to make sane public health, compassionate policy recommendations.
That was Indiana Recovery Alliance's Chris Abert.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Well, I've had a cell phone for some time, but recently I acquired a smartphone. Are you ready for that? I'm not sure I am, but I got it anyway. And one of the many things it can do is pay for things. It can zap money directly from my bank account into a merchant's computer system or put the charge right onto my credit card account. Now, I haven't done this yet, and I'm not sure I want to because I've been doing some research. Are you shopping with your smartphone? It's handy, all right, and they say it's dandy, but it can also be risky. If you use it store by store, you have to type in your account information each time. It's much safer to use a payment service like PayPal, Apple Pay, MasterCard, MasterPass, or Visa Checkout. They keep your account info in one place and send it to the merchant encrypted. Now, many stores, especially the big chains, have their own shopping apps. Now, these can be safe enough if you've got the real one. Fake versions of these apps, again, especially the ones for the big chains, are popping up all over. Make sure you download a shopping app from the store's real website or get it from a secure source, like the Google or iTunes app stores. Just doing a search for the app and clicking on a link can take you to a bogus website that will give you a counterfeit app, and the fakes are so good you might not know it. If you use your smartphone to check email, do not click any links in an email, no matter how fabulous the bargain being offered. Fraudsters just love to send out spamorama emails with deceptive links in them. Open your browser, type in the address of the merchant's website, and use what you find there, not a link in an email, no matter how legit it looks. And don't use your pay features over a Wi-Fi connection. Public Wi-Fi networks are open to gonifs and grifters as well as the good people you're buying from. Instead, do the transaction using the data stream on your smartphone account. Now, another smartphone scam has surfaced. Skimmers at gas stations. The cops down in Seguin, Texas, recently found a data skimmer in gas pumps which uses a Bluetooth connection to purloin your info while you're pumping. If your phone is on when you gas up and you have Bluetooth enabled, check the Other Devices setting before you start. If you see an odd string of letters and numbers, watch out. Look for the seal on the pump. If it's damaged or missing, beware, and report any of these things to the station attendant. It's also a good idea to use the pump closest to the station because it's easier for a crook to break into the more distant ones. It's up to you to make sure nobody outsmarts your phone. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Alex Davis. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
And you can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned right now for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.